אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
Our guest today is Dr. Vicky Gordon, OAM, an accomplished forensic psychologist with decades of experience working within Australia's criminal justice system. From assessing high-risk offenders to supporting courts in understanding mental health complexities, Vicky's work sits at the intersection of law, psychology and ethics. She's also a recipient of the Medal of the Order of Australia for her services to forensic mental health. Today, in the spirit of Limud, we'll explore how ideas like justice, accountability and tshuva, repentance, play out not just in our sacred texts, but in the real, often morally complex world of forensic psychology. Welcome, Vicky Gordon, to SBS Hebrew.
Hi, Mariel.
You are sitting on a panel for Limud Oz alongside other mental health workers, including Brandon Srutt, Sydney-based psychotherapist, and Julia Bloom, Melbourne-based psychoanalytic psychotherapist. Is that right? Or is she?
Yeah, that's correct.
Discussing the emotional, ethical, and political dilemmas that have surfaced in your rooms since October the 7th. First, I'd like to open the discussion by asking you, Vicky, exactly what a forensic psychologist is and how it differs from being a psychologist.
So I've actually got two areas that I work in, clinical and forensic psychology. Wearing my forensic psychology hat, I have been working probably from leaving university when I finished my master's for about 30 years at the Children's Court Clinic in Melbourne, Victoria. That's a clinic where we get referrals from the magistrate. They're not called judges in the Children's Court, they're called magistrates. Refers to our clinic when either a criminal matter, the adolescent that's done criminal matters, or a child protection issue where there's a child that's at risk for child protection reasons, and makes a referral to our clinic to do an assessment. The assessment is a full assessment of the child, the parents, the school, any other people involved with this child, and we make then recommendations to the court of what we think should happen. So usually it's more complex cases that we get referred to us when the magistrate thinks, I want to know the story behind what's going on here with this family, and I want to hear some psychological recommendations. So I've been doing that sessionally for 30 years. I think I stopped around COVID time.
And what would some recommendations include?
Well, we do a full workup, which might include some formal testing as well as clinical interviews. Child protection was where I was working mostly. And recommendation would be whether the child is to stay with the parents. We stay with the parents, stay with somebody outside of the parents. If it goes to foster care, access, it's different to the family court, so it's not about divorces, it's about children at risk. And we actually look at the Department of Human Services. They're also one of our interviewees. So we look at what they've recommended in this family's case, and we assess that if we think that that is the best option for the children. So we're an independent service that looks at the whole picture and make recommendations back to the magistrate.
And now you work privately. Do you think the nature of your job now is different to working for the government?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of my practice is formal work, so that was what we saw a lot of as well with the court work. But I guess I see a variety of people. I also, in my private work, focus on individual psychotherapy, so that's different to assessments. So I don't see the whole family. I do a little bit of court work now, but it's mostly supporting a person through the court process rather than doing assessments. So yeah, primarily I see individuals now, whereas doing the assessments it would be whole family assessments.
Right. And seeing the individuals, would they have to have come from a trauma background?
Yeah, just a general psychologist.
Okay.
That they want is to see a clinical psychologist. I sometimes do get court referrals. Again, it's more to support someone through the court process rather than assessment for the courts.
You're sitting on this panel alongside other mental health workers. As a Jewish woman and going through what we're going through as a collective post-October 7 and as a psychologist, what are your experiences? Are you seeing different patients coming in citing October 7 as a trigger point for some of their own mental issues or their own mental health challenges?
Absolutely. As a community, as a Jewish community, I think we're all traumatised. it's like we're still going through that trauma. You know, Rachel Goldberg Poland, mother of Herschel Poland, who was the most articulate, beautiful woman, and her voice has really carried us through these last 19 months. She said, when we talk about PTSD, that's post-trauma. Actually, it's like a truck. It's like a truck has run over my chest and the truck is still there. Mm. So we don't have time to process the post. We're still in it. Now, obviously, here in Australia, we're not as in it as she is and as the Israeli community is. But I think we've all developed this hypervigilance around the events of October 7, around the news cycle, around what, you know, whatever happens, comes out on the day. I think we are traumatized as a group, as a community, and it's impacted and felt in my office.
Have you seen people that weren't as connected to their Judaism before come back to it?
Yeah, absolutely. People feel more identified, feel that they no longer can tolerate the same level of whether it's ignorance or
passivity.
Sometimes, yeah, passivity about their Jewishness. Well, it can go both ways. I've had clients that actually took off the mezuzah from their front door because they were scared and didn't want to be identified as Jewish. And then I've got other clients that, you know, went out and bought a huge mug in David because they want to be noticed. And I want to be able to say that I'm Jewish here in Australia.
Do you think that it targets the Ashkenazi community more than the Sephardi community, given that a lot of Ashkenazi people come from a Holocaust background and that triggers them in some kind of way?
It would be hard to quantify. I mean, then the Sephardi community are often from the Middle East, so they feel it in a different way. But certainly the Holocaust reference has come into the room a lot. People saying, I am so glad that my parent is no longer alive to see this, or I'm so glad that my parent is, you know, in a home and doesn't understand what's going on because of the Holocaust, because of the Holocaust background and the echoes of what we're seeing and hearing. You know, really feel like we're back in 1930s Germany to some people.
There's a book that's called The Body Keeps the Score. Do you think that even though a lot of us weren't alive during the Holocaust, it really does trigger us, an event like this?
Absolutely. There's a woman called Rachel Yehuda in America who's done amazing work on epigenetics of trauma. She looked at people that were pregnant at 9/11 in New York that either had family there or were connected in some way to people there, and then measured the cortisol stress levels of her baby, these babies once they were born, and she tracked them for a while. And it seems that these babies were born with a higher level of cortisol, which is the stress hormone, in their system. So she posits, and she's written extensively on this, that epigenetically this trauma gene got passed on intergenerationally.
Oh, my God. And is there something that you can do to tackle this? But can you get therapy and can that alleviate things? Can that ameliorate the condition?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that's what, you know, trauma work is about, to be able to process your trauma and articulate it, work it through with a therapist or some other way and, come out the other side.
And how have you received this as the psychologist helping other people? Where do you get to air your grievances?
So I have a regular supervision, which is part of our training that we all go for supervision. It gives us a chance to debrief from our cases, to get sometimes another perspective. Sometimes we feel, you know, sort of stuck. We're too close, you know, in inverted commas, to the client, or we can't see things clearly. So supervision sessions give us that perspective. It's interesting because I'm also part of a non-Jewish supervision group. My primary supervisor is Jewish, but I'm also part of a non-Jewish supervisory group. I must say that I'm more careful there which cases I bring to that group, which before October 7, I never thought twice about it.
Mm, yeah. Do you ever break down?
Absolutely, I break down.
Yeah, from this subject, I mean. Sorry, I should qualify what I said.
No, yes, right. With this too. I mean, it was especially the first few weeks, you know, when we saw images that you can't unsee and that we probably shouldn't have seen. It was really hard to just go about, you know, business as normal, and really hard to be not affected because it's our community, we're also strongly identified here in Melbourne or in Australia with our Israeli community. It's hard to keep your equilibrium. I guess I try and be professional in the room. If I'm not up to doing it, I'll take a sick day and just say, no, you know, I rarely do it, but I have done at certain points where I just thought, no, I can't keep it together, because when I'm in the office with someone, I need to be 100% present with them. And if I don't feel I'm up to it, then, yeah, I'll take a half day off or something.
So what are the sorts of treatments that you do give to people that are coming in citing October 7th as one of their main grievances? Is it talk therapy, or are there different modalities that you can...
Yeah, well, you mentioned The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk, and he's been a wonderful beacon of light in this area of trauma. And he actually suggests that, or talks about, that the body has an imprint of trauma physically. So whereas talk therapy has its place, he also recommends other types of therapies that can address the body itself. That could be yoga, which I often recommend to my clients, which gives you the client body awareness, and somatic sort of therapy, where you talk about, well, where do you feel that in your body? You know, is it in your chest? Is it in your stomach? You know, what's going on for you in your body? And we talk about that. I talk about that with clients, and that's a different sort of message about, it's not just in your head, it's also in your body. I do EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization program, which
I've heard about this.
It's quite a complex, it's simple to administer, but it's a complex theory behind it, where basically the theory is that trauma gets lodged in your right brain in an unprocessed way. So we bring it into the left brain, which is our language brain, our thinking brain. We bring it into the left brain by doing bilateral stimulation of the two sides of the brain. And that's, again, that's a body treatment in a with a therapeutic framework. That's another one of Bessel van der Kolk's recommendations. So, yeah, I think the last decade in my work, I do trauma-informed work, but introducing other modalities, and it not necessarily with me. I will sometimes refer somebody to go to a yoga class, or go to an EMDR for an intensive. There's a GP that I refer to. So, yeah, other modalities come into the room alongside the talk therapy.
Has the EMDR shown good results?
Yeah, EMDR shows really good results. In fact, in Israel, they use it a lot in emergency rooms. They're probably more advanced in it than we are here, or more advanced in administering it. They use it in emergency rooms to sort of bring someone down from a highly aroused state and bring them back to the present moment. So, yeah, it's got a lot of uses, and it's actually been recognised now as a trauma treatment in Australia too.
Vicky, what keeps you motivated in such a difficult field?
I guess I get a lot of inspiration from my clients most of the time. I find it, inspiring. I've got one person in his 80s. He's retired now from work. He comes from a traumatic childhood, and he keeps showing up here wanting to work on himself. And I just have so much admiration for him, thinking, you know, here you are in your 80s. And you still want to work on yourself. So, yeah, I get inspiration from my clients too.
So would you have some clients that come in that want to keep progressing, like this client that you just mentioned? Or do you have clients that come in and sort of use psychology or talk therapy as a crutch to deal with their grievances?
Probably more of the latter, because I do more long-term work. I mean, the 83-year-old only came to me when he was 82. He'd been to other therapies before, but trauma therapy is hard work. You know, you're reflecting on parts of your life that you might have wanted to forget about, and trying to process them and understand them. So I don't think anyone just comes to fill in time or use it as a crutch. Not in this sort of work. It's too hard.
I know that you've done a lot of work on intergenerational trauma, especially with the Holocaust. Do you still have people coming in citing the Holocaust as a trigger for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I have quite a few second generation, so their parents were survivors. And, yeah, it still very much plays a significant role in how their lives have worked out.
Vicky Gordon, thank you so much for joining us here on SBS Hebrew. We really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Marielle. Thank you.
רוצים לשמוע עוד סיפורים? האזינו דרך האפל פודקאסט, גוגל פודקאסט, ספוטיפיי, או בכל מקום אחר בו ניתן להאזין לפודקאסטים.